This is Solve It for Kids.
Hello, my amazing and curious friends. My name is Jennifer, the Dean of all things STEM and STEAM, and this is Solve It for Kids, the podcast that gives kids and families a peek inside the real world of scientists, engineers, and experts as they solve problems in their jobs using creativity, cooperation, and critical thinking. And now please welcome to the show my podcast partner, Galactic Space Geek, Jeff Gagne.
Hello, Jennifer, and hello, listeners. We have an episode that is going to blow our minds, so let's get right to that.
Oh, I'm so curious. What problem are we solving today?
How can math blow your mind?
How can math blow your mind? Oh, I want to learn this one. Who's our guest today, Jeff?
Our guest today is Cindy Lawrence, the Executive Director and CEO of MoMath.
Welcome to the show, Cindy.
Welcome to you too. Thanks for having me here.
We are so excited. So we're going to talk about math, which I don't think we've had an episode strictly about math. I mean, we've talked about STEM and how math is a part of that, but I really want to know how math blows your mind. So let's just start with that. Like, very simple. Why is math so cool for you?
Well, let me give you an example. If you come to the Museum of Math in New York City, you can ride a tricycle that has square wheels.
Oh, wow. That is so cool. Yeah.
That did kind of blow my mind. How?
Yeah.
So you're thinking that can't work. It won't roll. It will just sit on the floor. It turns out that math can make something that seems impossible actually possible. You can use math to figure out what shape the floor has to be so that a square will roll on it.
Oh,
I like it.
Yes.
Right away. So I am already thinking that I have never been to the National Museum of Mathematics. However, it is now on a list.
Yes.
But I am starting to think, especially with that grin that you have right now that I wish our listeners could see, I feel like your museum is filled with examples like that and not filled with, say, worksheets and pencil sharpeners.
We do not have any worksheets, no pencil sharpeners, not very many numbers even. I know people think about math as being arithmetic, but at MoMath, math is much more like fun explorations, puzzles, hands-on full body things. You're not just looking at a square wheel tricycle, you're getting on it and you're riding it. We have a giant easel where you get to paint with symmetry. You make one stroke with your paintbrush and the screen fills with symmetrical strokes. You can dip your paintbrush in and change the colors, change the symmetries. Everything we do is fun.
Wow. Can you explain more about that? So this is a screen that you're painting on? And then explain to us a little more about the symmetry. How does that work?
So believe it or not, there are only 17 different ways that you could have a pattern on wallpaper. And I'm going to blow your mind again, because I'm going to tell you that mathematicians have a very unusual name for these 17 different patterns. They actually call them the 17 wallpaper groups. The official name.
That's crazy. Wow.
I know, it's fun, right? And so we could have had a computer screen where you could have played with these, but we wanted everything to be giant, full body.
Right.
So we got the largest screen we could find. And then we spent time creating a special paintbrush and an easel with paint cans of different colors. And when you dip that special paintbrush into your chosen color, the paintbrush knows and the computer tells the screen that when you send your paintbrush across the screen, it should paint with that color.
Okay.
You also have choices of which kind of pattern you want to use, one of those 17.
Oh.
So you choose a pattern, you dip your paintbrush into a color, and you start painting, and the white screen immediately is filled with that color in that particular pattern. Then you choose a different pattern, a different color. People spend hours creating the most beautiful artworks, all with math.
Okay, wow. So that sounds awesome, and it sounds like a lot of fun to do. I imagine people are always watching what's being created. Can you explain a little bit more about how creating art with patterns is mathematics?
So math is actually the study of pattern. It's looking and recognizing that something seems to repeat, or there's some familiar trend or something that you saw in one place that looks like something else, and making those connections. And so when you look at patterns, you're actually thinking mathematically. And if you're good at recognizing patterns, you're probably going to be very good at mathematics.
Very cool.
Yeah. Okay. So why? If you're good at recognizing patterns, how are patterns found in math? I mean, I think I know this answer, but I want you to tell our listeners this.
So all of math is really observing patterns and seeing how one thing relates to another. So if you even go back to your basic arithmetic, you might start to notice that when you multiply 10 by 2, by 5, by 7, you get 20, you get 50, you get 70. And you suddenly realize, I'm just taking the number I started with and adding a zero on the end. That's a pattern you might recognize.
Okay.
You might find other patterns and wonder. We have a very interesting exhibit where you play a game against a computer, and it's a game called Finding 15.
Okay.
And you need to collect three numbers that add to 15 before your robotic opponent does the same. And once you take enough.
Is that a combination of arithmetic and math? Because you have to do numbers really fast.
Well,
right?
A little bit of arithmetic, but once you take a number, the robot can't take that. If you take three, it's off the board. And if they take five, it's off the board. Now, when you play, it might seem really hard, but there's a curtain, and we let you go behind the curtain. And I don't want to give away our secret, but what I'll tell you is that if you look at that game in another way, as if it is a simple child's game that we are all familiar with, you will win every time. And so one pattern that you might recognize after playing with this exhibit is that a game that you thought was about addition is actually the equivalent of a simple child's game that has absolutely nothing to do with addition. And most people would say has nothing to do with math.
Okay, now I'm curious. I guess we're going to have to go to New York, Jeff.
Yeah, I have some ideas floating around, but I don't want to say them. Okay, you've already explained several different exhibits inside your museum and how cool they sound. Jen and I are already ready to book our flights to New York to come check. How do you create these exhibits for your museum about math and numbers, but sort of in these ways that aren't really what people are going to expect?
So here's the secret. The secret is that mathematicians, people who go to school beyond 4 years of college, they take graduate level courses, they used to be the only ones that got to see the really cool bits of mathematics.
Okay.
It's kind of like when you learn to play an instrument, and the beginning part of that involves a lot of practice. How do you hold your hand? How do you hold a bow if you're playing a string instrument? And you have to learn to read music, which is memorizing, and you play your scales up and down, and that doesn't sound so beautiful. But you do that because you somewhere heard beautiful music. You heard a symphony, and you want to learn how to do that.
Right.
So a lot of times in math, we think about those early parts, learning our addition facts and our multiplication tables. But until MoMath came around, most of us never got to see the beautiful symphony of mathematics. And so how do we make exhibits? Mathematicians, they see all the beautiful things, and they would explain it to our design team and say, this would be a great exhibit. And I am not a mathematician by training. So my job very often was to say, I don't understand.
I could do that with
our
math.
Listeners can understand
and,
that.
And so they would explain it again. These were very patient, wonderful people. And usually after they explained it a second time, I would say, I still don't understand. And we would have these long conversations. And eventually the light bulb would go off and I would say, oh, wait, do you just mean? And I would say my understanding of what I thought they were saying. And very often the response was, yes, that's exactly what we were saying. And so I would say, well, it's not exactly, but if you think what I'm saying is pretty close or is that, can we explain it my way? Can we set it up my way? So it was really a collaboration between experts who really knew the beautiful parts of math and had the wonderful ideas for the exhibits. And then those of us that were not mathematicians who kind of came at it from the everyday person point of view and said, okay, let's figure out how we can make this compelling and fun and understandable, because our museum is really not just for mathematicians. Mathematicians will like it, but non-mathematicians will love it.
Yeah, which is probably even more important. So I'm going to move a little bit from your exhibit and your museum. So any parents that are listening to this at home, you know, we all want to get our kids excited about math, but it's hard, right? Because what they're in the thick of is arithmetic, the adding, the subtracting, the multiplying, the dividing, the, dare I say, calculus. Y'all missed that face that I just made. It was like, ah! So, I mean, do you have any tips for parents that could help them get their kids interested in math and look at it from a different point of view instead of just numbers that they have to figure out how to manipulate?
So I think there are a couple of areas of math that are really naturally exciting to everyone and to kids in particular. So one thing is play with math, and play with math in the form of puzzles, a riddle, something you look at, something you try to figure out.
I like that.
There's actually a lot of math in solving puzzles. Also geometry. We are all naturally interested in the shapes around us. So
yes, that's true.
Children who play with blocks, and many adults like playing with those blocks too. We build with Legos and tinker toys and erector sets. There's math in that too, figuring out how things will fit together, what angle things have to be at to make the house you're building stand up and be stable.
Yes.
So I would look for the parts of math that are fun and playful and focus on those. The mechanics, yes, we have to learn, but that's not the part that I think really engages people. We think that math actually can be beautiful and wonderful and inspiring.
Yes.
And people will come to the museum, but we also run online programs for people that can't make it to the museum.
Oh, that's so cool.
That is very cool. So I really appreciate that suggestion for families. I have an 11-year-old, just started middle school. She is starting a whole new world of math, obviously, in class, but she does love puzzles. And I'm wondering, for those of us not lucky enough to live in New York City to be able to just zip over, pop over, and go to MoMath to get that inspiration, you've obviously been doing this for quite a while and have lots of examples. Are there general examples that anyone, Jen's in Florida, I'm in Colorado, that we could, you know, is it outside in nature? Is it inside our own houses? Are there examples that we could find to sort of point out that beauty of math that would link back to this is why you're doing that stuff in class?
So math in the world around us is everywhere. There's math in our cell phone. There's math in the way the petals of a flower form. Yes. There's math in the structure of our home. There's math in the order in which you run your errands on the weekend.
No, that's true. Yeah.
Right?
It's probably the shortest distance, right? Like you pick the path that's, you're going to start here and then go. I never thought about
that. You think about which things are on the right side of the highway and the left side of the highway. And so we're all sort of natural problem solvers and efficiency seekers. So math is all around us. But then there are some things that kids love generally that are also math, things like code breaking. Online program about breaking codes, but you can read a book on that from your library. Who hasn't made up a secret code that they've shared with a friend at some point in their life?
Yes.
Sure.
Another natural place to find mathematics actually is in certain games. If you've ever played the game Yahtzee or Master.
Oh,
definitely.
Throwing dice. Dice are extremely mathematical. In fact, blow your mind with this. We have a program in the museum that's called Crazy Dice, and we run it online as well. And the challenge is, if you were given a blank set of dice, so they're only white, and you could take a black marker and put 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6 on those sides, however you want. So you could have dice that have 2 ones and no 5s,
oh,
or 2 threes and 2 fours, or all 6 sides could have a 1 on them. And the question is, and this is something we work with students to help them solve this puzzle, is there a different way to number 2 dice so that your probability, your chances of rolling any number is exactly the same as it would be with 2 normal dice?
Wow.
I
think you just blew our mind with that one.
Keep asking questions that make me forget that I'm interviewing you in a podcast because my brain's trying to solve it.
It's all the pressure. You know, the thing I think is really amazing about math, and you touched on this too, is, you know, we've had a lot of scientists and engineers on the show. And my husband was a math major at the Naval Academy, and my son was a material science engineer. And the two of them can talk math and computations and analytics and all this kind of stuff. And it goes way over my head because, like, the numbers don't get me. But what does get me is you show me a satellite, right? Or a rocket, or we just interviewed the Alvin, which is, you know, the submersible that goes down. And you talk about the pressure of pushing on the Alvin and how they had to do the math to figure out the shape to make that. Now you have me interested. Exactly. So maybe that's what you're talking about, is have kids see stuff like that.
Not only that, but if you want to be an astronaut or if you want to calculate rocket trajectories, you need math for that.
Yes.
Yes. So there's a lot of careers that rely on math, really fun, cool careers that you might enjoy.
Exactly.
And if you're good in math, I think you mentioned satellites. So GPS, yes. we all use our phones now to get around.
Sure.
GPS is 100% based on mathematics.
It wouldn't
work if somebody didn't understand the geometry of 3 points in space and how we use that to identify where we are.
Yep, that's exactly
love
true.
Love it. I love all, and when I asked the question, you spit out like 6 different examples without even thinking. I love it. You must have dozens more. I want to ask you a question about your field trips that come through MoMath. Do you hear 1 or 2 particularly popular comments from kids of sort of an, I didn't know this, or wow, this is fascinating, after they come visit you?
Anytime I go into the museum, and there are visitors there, I always hear 3 words. And sometimes I try and count how often I hear them. I just want to say that both of you said those 3 words already on this podcast.
I'm sure.
And those 3 words are, that's so cool. Yes.
We say that a lot, don't we, Jeff?
Yeah. I hear that all the time in the museum about all of our different exhibits. And when do you ever hear an excited voice say, that's so cool? About math. It's such an inspiring experience to be in a place and look around and see people smiling and having fun and laughing. And that's so cool. It just makes all of the effort to create this place well worthwhile.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so now I have a question for you, because you said you're not a mathematician. Did you like math as a kid? How did you get to where you are now?
Okay, that's a great question. I did like math as a child, but I had one really terrible experience with math.
It
stayed with me so much that I can tell you that it was in second grade. It was right after the end of summer, and we were given a worksheet where you had to subtract and you had to borrow.
Okay.
And we had learned that at the end of first grade, but over the summer, I had forgotten how to do it. And I sat there and I looked at that paper and I didn't know what to do. And I was sad and I was frustrated and I looked around and everybody else's pencils were moving.
That's the worst, right? Everybody else can figure it out and you're sitting there going, I have no idea what this is.
You know, that experience really stayed with me, because it's very easy to have an experience like that and decide, okay, I'm no good in math.
Yes, it is.
And it's interesting because there are certainly people in any field that are really good at something naturally. There are artists. There are people who are naturally fast runners, shooting baskets. But we never tell our children, well, if you can't sit down and play a song by ear on the piano, then you can never play the piano. Don't think about being a piano player, pianist. But with math, somehow, if there's some children who just get it faster, there's a tendency to say to the children who don't get it, well, maybe math is not your thing. Maybe you'll be a writer.
Right.
Yes.
But we don't do that with any other field. Could you imagine what the world would be like if the child who was struggling to learn to read was told, well, maybe you're not just going to be a reader. We'll find maybe something.
Reading's not your thing.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
It's just unheard of. And so I very firmly believe that everybody will find a moment when they struggle in math, no matter how brilliant you are, no matter how you feel you might be less brilliant in math, everybody will struggle at some point, but it's no different than struggling to learn how to play an instrument, learn how to get the ball into the basket if you're a basketball player, or hit
That's
the ball
true.
If you're a baseball player. It takes time and effort and practice, but everybody can find a way to connect with mathematics.
So how did you get from second grade to here and liking it?
Well, after second grade, after that unfortunate experience, somebody did show me and it all came back to me. And I discovered that I really did love math. What I loved about math was that it didn't really involve so much memorization. Once you got past the basic addition facts and the multiplication, there's no way around memorizing those. But once you got past that, every math problem felt like a puzzle to be solved. And not only that, what I also loved is if you solved it one way, you might be able to think about a different way to solve it. And if you did that other way and you didn't get the same answer, that was an even bigger mystery. Like, wait a minute, I should have gotten the same answer. And you go back and you find out that maybe you did something wrong one way or the other. But I just, that satisfaction of solving something. When you work on a puzzle, when you put that last piece in, if it's a jigsaw puzzle, or if it's a geometric puzzle and you're trying to figure out, you know, how to get the Rubik's Cube back to its solved state.
Oh my gosh, I could never do that. My brother was so good at those. I was the one that was like, can I just peel off these stickers and get them?
Well, let me tell you something though. That's what I would call creative problem solving.
Now, well, there you go. I'm going to go back and tell my brothers that. I creatively problem solved. I did not cheat.
So people who are good in math very often are creative thinkers that way. And so if someone asked you to solve the Rubik's Cube and you figured out that you could pull the stickers off and put them on, I'd say that's a solution. It may not be the solution that was intended. There may be other interesting ways to come to that solution. But thinking outside the box is really important in problem solving in life. And I think when you solve a hard math problem, sometimes thinking outside the box really helps you. And we'll see an example of that a little bit later. But you're also training for life. We're all going to face challenges in life. And if you become a good problem solver, that's a skill you will carry with you into other aspects of your life.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You just took what I was going to say / ask you. You took us right there. Because as you were describing your post-second grade mathematics career, all I could picture, the way you were describing solving those puzzles and problems, is you kind of became a mathematical Nancy Drew. You saw them as, you know, or mathematical Scooby-Doo. And I think the way you started thinking about, oh, is there another way to solve it? I started believing that regardless of whether we're talking about math or engineering or music or art or anything, if you find yourself being willing to ask more questions about that thing you're doing, you are probably finding something that you're either going to have a like for, or as you said before, a love for.
You know, I used to teach in another realm, another area, and I will give you one of my favorite quotes that I used to share with my students, and that is, the only foolish question is the one you don't ask.
Yes.
Nice.
I agree. I do that with, so I teach online for science. I'm a science teacher, and I say that. I also say there's no such thing as stupid questions, which can kind of be flipped on you, because I have some of these kids asking me questions and I'm like, you know what? I'm really not an astrophysicist. I cannot answer that. However, I say, you know what? Let's go look it up together, right? Like, let's go look up the answer. But, you know, I am not the person to answer that question.
I will. That makes me think of something. I want to point out that we live in amazing times, because years ago, if you wanted to look up something in astrophysics or in mathematics, you had to get yourself to a little place called the library and figure out where the books were on the shelves, yes, and maybe page through the books. And it was a time-intensive experience that you maybe didn't get to do just at any moment that you were interested.
Yes.
But the wonder of technology and the internet today is that any child anywhere, or any adult who's interested in mathematics or wants to play with some interesting math puzzles, can do that with a simple search on the web. You can watch videos by amazing people like Grant Sanderson, who's also known as 3 Blue 1 Brown, or Matt Parker, who is really funny. And you can watch their videos and learn something about math while being entertained, or delve more deeply if you want to know what shape would work to make a square wheel tricycle roll smoothly. You can go online and you can find out the answer.
We might have to Google that one, Jeff.
Definitely.
I mean, I think this has been so much fun, and I've learned more about math than I ever thought. But I think we're at the point in the show where I'm very curious to know what your challenge is for our listeners. I don't know. What do you think, Jeff?
This sounds pretty intriguing. Well, since we already have several things to look up.
Right.
And I'm already still chewing on a couple of things she said. I can't wait for another one.
Okay. Well, here is my challenge. It's almost back to school time. Let's imagine it's the first day of school. The halls are all shiny and scrubbed. The lockers have all been washed. And you're the first child in the school building. And okay, there's a hallway with 100 lockers in front of you.
Ooh.
And you are so excited about that first day of school that you decide to run down the hallway. And as you do, you're going to open every single locker.
Ooh.
And so you get to the end of the hall and all 100 lockers are now open.
Got it.
Now somebody follows you into the school. This is student number 2. And they see what you've done and they say, that looked like fun, but I'm going to do something a little different. I'm the second person in the school. I'm going to do something to every second locker. Locker number 2, number 4, number 6, number 8.
Okay.
I'm going to close those lockers. And so student number 2 runs down the hallway and closes what amounts to all of the even lockers.
Okay.
Okay, now student number 3 shows up and they say, well, I'm number 3, so I'm going to do something to locker number 3 and number 6 and number 9.
All right.
But geez, some of them are open, some of them are closed. You know what? I'm going to change whatever I see. If the locker's open, I'm going to close it. And if the locker's closed, I'm going to open it. And so the third student runs down the hallway, opening and closing every third locker. The fourth student comes in and does every fourth locker, and so on and so forth. And there are 100 students in this school. And my big challenge for the day is, after the 100th student goes running down the hall, what do all of the lockers look like?
Oh, my gosh. I'm sensing algebra here to solve this. I don't know.
It's going
to
be good.
Oh, my gosh.
Once again, my brain is off working on a math problem.
Mine is a little terrified, but sure.
It's terrifying, but it's actually not. And if you'd like a hint, I'm happy to give you a little hint.
Oh, give us a hint. Ooh. Give us a hint.
So my hint is, run through this on paper for the first couple of students and look for a pattern. Remember? Through this for the first couple of students, you probably won't have to go all the way to the 100th student before you might notice something that will help that light bulb go on and you'll say, aha, I know.
Oh, I like this. Okay. So if you want to know the answer, we're not going to tell you on the show. You're going to have to go to our website, Solve It for Kids, and we will have it. You also have to find it on the page, on the correct page for this podcast episode. But I am very intrigued and I'm going to try that. I think that'll be lots of fun. Cindy, it has been fabulous having you on our show today. I'm so excited we got to talk to everybody about the wonders of math. Thank you for being on Solve It for Kids.
Absolutely, Cindy. I haven't had a chance to visit your museum yet, but you are doing a fabulous job.
Yes, absolutely.
Because my brain has 5 math problems it's working on, and I'm going to be paying attention to math out in my world.
Yes.
So you are doing a great job.
Well, wonderful. Thank you so much for having me. I encourage everyone to visit MoMath online, if not in person, momath.org. We'd love to see you. Thank you for having me.
My goodness, I have always been a lover of math, and the number of different ways that math gets involved in our world, but now I really want to go visit MoMath to see how they are building these exhibits in the museum itself. What do you think, Jen?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I love math. I think math is great. I'm not kind of great at math. You know, I like science a little better and they go hand in hand. But I want to go, like, play with math, so to speak.
That's like, what I it sounds
ride
like.
The tricycle that has the square wheels and see what is involved in that. That sounds really intriguing. But I don't know. What do you think about this challenge? Pretty. I don't know about this one.
I love how this challenge directly connects to our listeners who are in schools that have lockers. So you elementary school students, if you don't have a locker yet, just imagine Big Brother or Big Sister's hallway full of lockers. What an interesting math challenge. It will be interesting to see how many of you send us an answer on our social media to what you think the answer is. Or I would love to hear if that challenge sparks some other way of using math to create something fun just like that.
Oh yeah, that is intriguing. So teachers, don't get mad at us if kids are all opening and closing lockers. I'll just have to say that. But if you do figure out the challenge, please share it with us on our social media. We are at KidsSolve at Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And don't forget to check out our website, solveitforkids.com, where we have a page for every episode. And that's where the answer to this challenge will be.
Until next time, Jeff will be at his daughter's middle school opening and closing lockers, trying to figure this one out. Until our next episode, this is Jen and Jeff for
Solve It for Kids.